Hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Lorraine Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at NJHSA. And this is always a very interesting group, great discussions, because, you know, COOs, number twos, I'm not sure what to call you all. I call them number twos. I think make a lot of the decisions when it comes to what's going on, because you have your boots on the ground, you know what's going on. So I think that this is always such a great meeting. You have two co-chairs. Yulia Gayadenko is from JFS of Detroit, but she is not with us today. She actually is volunteering and she's in Ukraine right now.
She's in Poland.
She's in Poland, right? She's in Poland. Good point. She's in Poland.
She's amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing. She is amazing. And she will be back in what, another 3 weeks, I think. She's going for quite some time, from what I understand. Right, Lee?
I think at least a couple of weeks. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And then Lee is our other co-chair, Lee Friedman, JFCS Minneapolis. And he will lead our discussion. And I guess take it away. Everyone just put in your community, that would be great. Right click. And I think we definitely have some new people. So we should maybe introduce ourselves. People should introduce themselves.
All right. Well, thank you, Lisa, as always, for hosting and getting us connected. I put in the chat some questions that we had, sort of some topics that we thought people might want to talk about. They were in the agenda, but I thought I would put them there too, because we really want this to be whatever people want it to be, whatever conversations or topics are really on the top of your mind, where you want to share something, or you want to get input and ideas from others. So whatever's most interesting is what we'd like to cover. But we certainly can just quickly connect on sort of what our roles are and what the agencies are that we're with. That's helpful. So I'm with JFCS Minneapolis, which just also happens to be the host city for the upcoming conference. I hope others are planning to come. That was one of our topics today, was to talk about how we might connect while we're here. Looking forward to having people come and doing an in-person conference again. I have been at JFCS Minneapolis for about 7.5 years, most of that time in the chief operating officer role. We have about 30 different programs and about 115 staff. So that just gives you a sense of sort of where we fit into the different sizes and arrangements of the other agencies. So I will pass the ball to Jessica.
Hi, it's nice to meet everyone. I'm Jessica Fleischer from Jewish Family and Children's Services of Northern New Jersey. This is my first time joining you, so I'm looking forward to listening and learning and connecting.
Jessica, I'm in Fairlawn.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And where are you? Paramus? Where are you?
We're in Teaneck.
Teaneck. Mm-hmm. So fun.
Yeah. Right down the road. Nice.
You want to pass it to somebody else?
Oh, I'll pass it to Andrea.
Hi, everyone. It's my first time joining the meeting as well. I'm Andrea Ballard, Jewish Family and Children's Services of Southern Arizona. We're in Tucson. I am the COO. We're about a 70-person employee agency. Thank you. I'll pass it to...
How long have you been there, Andrea?
Going on 4 years, just shy of 4 years. I'll pass it to Polo.
Hello, everyone. I'm Polo Coronado. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for Jewish Community Services of South Florida. We don't have a COO. So right now what we have is a structure where we have the CEO and she has a CPO, Chief Programs Officer, and a Chief Administrative Officer. So I take care of all the back office and all the support to keep the business going, while Heather Winters, she takes care of all the programs. Lately, we added a case manager separate from Heather because of all the complexity that has to do in dealing with not only now the Holocaust survivors, but now since we have become an affiliated agency to HIAS, we started supporting refugees, taking advantage of all the infrastructure for case management of Holocaust to also do that. and some other emergencies here. Like, you know, we in Miami, we have on top of the hurricanes, we have buildings collapsing like Surfside, or in the case of a recent shooting a couple of weeks ago where somebody was shot in a JCC domestic violence incident, we were there for them. So case management is becoming an important element in our structure. And looking forward to continue to be part of a network. We are as powerful as the persons we network with. So as I would tell my students in the past, your a network is your net worth. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that. So I've been with this organization for a year and a half now. And before this, I was an executive director for a workforce development organization called Gear Up, like 1 year up, workforce development for young adults.
Polo, my daughter, Anya Gipps, right, works as a case manager at JCS, the disaster and trauma recovery specialist for the victims of, or the survivors of Surfside.
So it's great to know. We enjoyed having you around. It's like 2-3 weeks now.
Yeah.
Polo, do you want to pass the ball?
So I pass the ball to Audra.
Thank you, Paolo. Nice to meet you all. I'm Audra Kaplan. Here in Chicago, I work for Keshet, which is, I don't know if people are familiar with it. It's a disability organization. We have, sorry, Lisa, Lorraine, I have to go. She heard my spiel earlier today.
I love Keshet. Good.
We have therapeutic day schools that are housed within Jewish day schools. So one in Zalman Schechter, one in Eiderkram, which is an Orthodox high school. We have recreation programs and camp programs. We partner with the JCC here and provide the one-to-one, one-to-two level of support for campers with disabilities to be fully included in all of the day camps. We work with overnight camps as well. And then we have adult services. We have an adult day program and residential programs as well. That's kind of our big pieces. And then of course we do a lot of community education and consultation with synagogues and with any organization that really wants to make sure that they're being inclusive. We work a lot with our Jewish Federation. We have about, I was trying to think as we were talking, I think we have about 120 full-time year-round employees. And then in the summer we hire another about 150 summer seasonal employees for the camp support program. I started at Keshet in August as the chief program officer. We currently don't have a chief operating or administrative officer. So a lot of that at the moment falls to me, and we're probably going to be hiring in operations. Don't know what exactly their title will be. So a lot of that currently is falling to me. Earlier in my career, I worked at Jewish Child and Family Services here in Chicago for about 18 years as a psychologist. And then in between here and there, I was working at Ramat Haron, bringing their disability program there, and ended up as their associate director.
So, I didn't know all that. So.
Not a traditional psychology path, but.
Yeah, interesting. So Jim, I guess, will bring us home.
Jim, it's passing it to you. Big finish.
Jim Janetsky, I'm the CEO at JFS in Detroit. It's going on 11 months that I've been in the position, so it's relatively new. We are set up where I'm pretty much the administrative side, and we have two program officers. One of them is Yulia, who we talked about earlier, and she's in Poland right now. And so they kind of split up all of our programmatic stuff. Yulia does most of the older adult, and then the other program officer does a lot of our mental health and that kind of thing. I'm just looking forward today to talking about the conference and trying to understand better what I can expect when I'm there.
Great. Well, thanks everyone for those intros, and it's great to see folks who are tapping into the network and particularly into this group for the first time. Just one thing to say about that, you know, we have these sessions, Lisa, is it every other month or something?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then in between, there are opportunities to sort of tap into others. If you, you know, does anybody have a policy on this, or is anybody trying to do this or that? So if you have those sorts of needs, you know, you want to get some information, just send an email to Lisa and she can communicate with the group. We don't have it. It's not set up in a way where we can all communicate with the whole group directly. We don't have rosters that we.
Well, I can send you all rosters. That's not a problem. It's just that it changes all the time.
Right.
So if you want to ask the question, you just, you know, email me and I'll send you the list, current list as of that moment. Right. Or if you want me to, I can do it as well. However you want to work it. That's right.
Thank you.
We generally do it blind copy just because
yes.
I can send you all the list because not everybody's interested potentially in the answer to the question that someone is posing, right? You don't want a bunch of emails that you're not interested in. But
okay. But that's just another way to tap into the network. As Paula was describing it, that our network is our net worth. I haven't heard it put that way, but that's just another way to use the affinity group as a resource and to connect with folks. And certainly, you know, there's always the opportunity to reach out just to a particular agency or a particular staff person. Since Jim was mentioning the conference and Lisa and I were talking a little bit about it before we got on, I guess just show of hands or push the little button with the hand, but how many people are coming to the conference? All right, so we get to see everybody but Polo. And hopefully that'll happen at the next one after that. So Lisa, do you want to just
tell
us what are the best ways, either with like the socials or the lunch thing, like what are the best ways to connect?
So the conference is jam-packed. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that schedule, but it is busy from 7:30 until like 8 o'clock at night. And there are some opportunities to network. We have the cocktail, you know, hours. One is Sunday night, I think is Weinberg. Monday night, we're hosting. So that's fun to go to. Saturday night, if you're here, we're going to all be at the lobby bar. And then we have Havdalah. That's also fun, but the Havdalah is not at the lobby bar. We have the affinity group lunch time, which is on Monday. If you sign up, you have to register in advance for your meal because it's going to be in the hotel. All the affinity groups will be meeting in different rooms or talking together. And we have Sunday morning, but I'm not sure this is going to impact you. We have affinity group lounges because I think all of you will be at the executive briefing. Probably you'll be going to Minneapolis, JFCS Minneapolis. They're taking buses there and Ruben will be doing an executive briefing. And, you know, breakfast, all the meals are a good opportunity to get together. We've got a lounge that if you want to talk about a certain subject, all you have to do is sign up. Oh, I want to talk about this at this time and people can come. But if it's your first time at this conference, you'll see it is jam packed, you know, so you'll see each other right now. And when you see each other and you'll see Jessica, oh, Jessica, you're in the group. It's, you know, how's it going? What's happening? And
the one time that is sort of designated as a time for people in the group to get together with others in the group is the lunch on
Monday. Right.
And that's something that if people want to do, they should do ahead of time. And just Lisa was just telling me, and I think I had seen this, but I knew there was a lunch, but I didn't know it was the affinity group lunches because I don't know that that's been, well, maybe I missed it. I don't know how clear that's been communicated, but it is pricey. And I can't speak to why. Or,
it's $90. You know. I can because it's kosher and it's in the hotel. And that's how much it costs, right? So it might even be $95 for the affinity group lunches. So if you want that, you have to sign up in advance, but we will actually send something out probably after Passover to make clear what the heck is going on so everyone knows. Because I think Lee's right. It hasn't been that crystal clear as to what's expected.
And for the breakouts, Lisa, do people indicate at all before they go what ones they're planning to do? Or is that just you just show up to whichever ones you want?
Right. You just show up to whichever ones. And there's some really interesting development tracks as well. I mean, you know, sessions as well. I think that there'll be plenty of interesting content for everyone. I'm not just saying that because I, you know, am in charge of the conference. I'm just saying that because I think it's true. And you'll let me know if it's not afterwards. I always love feedback. So there you go.
And I'll say that Lisa and I actually met at the conference in Atlanta. And that was the first time we met. So that was
riding on a bus to the
Civil Rights Museum, which is actually just tremendous. It was a great place to be able to go. And I think because of coming out of COVID and different things, we're not really doing an event quite like that here in the Twin Cities. We're not like bringing people to a venue like that or any other, but nevertheless.
But we have the mayor coming. We have the mayor coming to talk.
The mayor of Minneapolis and one of our city council members who's also a board member here at JFCS. I think she's coming too. So
right. It's going to be really interesting. We're going to make it fun. We just didn't want people, because when we planned everything, we weren't even sure what was going on with COVID. So we weren't sure if we should have people going out of the hotel and coming back in, or were people going to be upset. So we had to make that decision around a year ago. And that's why we made the decision to stay in the hotel. But we're going to be in different places in the hotel. And the best part, you guys, is that we're the only people in the hotel, right? There's nothing else. There are no other conferences. There's nothing else. So it's going to be all ours. So I love that.
So and literally like no other guests?
Maybe there'll be a few other guests, but there's not going to be a conference or anything.
So anybody you see around the halls of the...
The majority of people will be us.
Got it. Mm-hmm. And welcome. Thanks for coming. So we were just talking about the conference. Are you coming to the conference in Minneapolis?
Yes. Yes. A group of us are coming. Andrea, myself, Nina, Laura, and Beth and May, right?
We're going to have a good time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And Polo's he's apparently holding down the fort while his colleagues come. So
you better tell Miriam that you want to go.
The next time around, he'll get to come, hopefully. I don't where maybe it's not announced, maybe it's a secret. I was going to say, where is it next year? But looking forward to it. And we'll get more information about the lunch if people want to do that. And outside of that, maybe we could figure out some clever ways to make sure that people know if people want to, you know, gather or find one another more easily. We could do that. I don't know. But if you have suggestions, let Lisa or I know, and we can try to think about that.
So after the cocktail, parties on Monday night, we've also set up, we have around 10 or 15 different hotels that have reservations for 10. If you want to do a dinner, you can, assign yourself to this restaurant and then sign up. And if more people want to come than 10, then we can make more reservations. We just have to know. So there are different opportunities to, get together.
So the lunch, where specifically it's for affinity groups, is in the hotel. And there are dinner options where reservations have been made and you can sign up, but it's not specifically by affinity group.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Okay. Some people sign up because they like Thai food, right? And then you meet people. That's where I've met so many people, is that, I've gone to one of these dinners where I didn't know anyone, but I like Thai food. Hello. And you get to talk to the people that are at your table, and it's fun, and everyone's super friendly, and of course they are, because they're all in the same field and they all came to Minneapolis and they all want to meet people and learn from each other and talk about their dogs.
Well, I'll be interested to see which Thai restaurant was selected to put on the list for Minneapolis or St. Paul. There are some very good ones, actually. So okay, so that's for the conference. So in the chat, I put the topics that have been set out in the agenda. One has to do with sort of this next normal and how it's going. Biggest joys, biggest headaches. We talked about the conference. Another topic was potentially ideas about presenters. We did a little survey at the end of 2021 to see what people are interested in, what would make these meetings, useful and interesting. And there were a number of people who would like to see presenters, but we don't really have suggestions who they want to present or on what topics. So that's something we could talk about a little bit. How does your agency approach developing new initiatives or programs? And then talk about sort of outcome measurements and how people are doing that. So anybody who wants to throw out a topic that you want to start talking about, and that will be the next one then.
Or does anyone want to talk about any of these topics?
I can start if you want me. So I think let me start with my biggest joy and biggest headaches. And I'm sure that the headache will be common to you all. In terms of biggest joys is to be able to work with an organization whose staff is so mission-driven. So I lost my job because of the pandemic, and I joined this job because of the pandemic. And because I was part of a network, local network here of CEOs of nonprofits. And when I announced to them that I was being let go, because we let go 20% of that organization, they said, no, don't leave this group here. It's just, I'm sure you're going to land in another leadership position. By the way, Miriam here is looking for a CEO. So you would like to apply, and here I am. So the joy is being part of an organization that has been so resilient. So we had like 4 or 5 laptops, and the rest of the people had desktops and working from the office. And in no time, this organization was able to move remote. Now it's the other way around. Every person has a laptop, docking station, 2 screens, working from home, hybrid, all the infrastructure. We've been able to respond to the situation of the Surfside building collapse, all the situation with the immigrants and the refugees coming from Afghanistan and now Ukraine. And it's just amazing to see how this organization can readjust and just keep moving forward, mission-driven. An important choice is that since now we have over 40 different programs, an important choice was to really had a meeting with the board and defined what are now our 4 core competencies or pillars or whatever you want to call them, centers of excellence. So we have case management, we have behavioral counseling services. We have the helpline. We manage the 211 helpline here that, among other things, is the suicide prevention line, what used to be Switchboard Miami, and also food sufficiency. So it's interesting because now every time that we have to, for instance, we had to assess if resettlement was a good fit. It was not that difficult now because we have the 4 core categories and it fit perfectly well in the case management center of excellence. So now as we keep moving forward and trying to make each one of the programs self-sufficient, having these 4 core categories fully recognized by everyone all the way up to the board is making a difference, evaluating and assessing going forward. Timing was also beautifully perfect. We are relaunching our strategic plan. So last year, it was over the 3-year strategic plan, and we are relaunching a new 5-year strategic plan that is going to go around these 4 categories and this need for every program to be sustainable going forward. So
Paulo, I know that your workforce, you had a workforce program, and because it didn't fall in those 4 centers of excellence, you had to let it go. So it's very clear for your agency,
yes,
what you're taking on and what you're letting go. I think that's
and
really
it's easier
great.
To organize everything. So we just finished what is called the OGSM, Objective Goals, Strategies, and Measure. And all of this is aligned with the 4 core categories competencies. So it's been a great way to synergize and organize our work. The biggest headache, the big resignation, the staffing, we had anywhere between 15% of the people, maybe 20% of the value of the payroll that is vacant. Yeah. So that means a lot more work for the people who stays because we are not serving less people. We are serving more people than before, right, and we are doing it with the same staff or less. So we have around 200 staff in JCS, but we have around 300 staff in what we call Masada. Masada is a home care, different 501c3 that is affiliated to us. And well, we used to have more than 300 aides. Now we are having like 260 aides, but delivering the same hours. So a lot of these hours are overtime that is heavy on the person, on the aide, but also heavy in cost. Because in many cases, when you add the 50% on top of the regular hours for the overtime, it goes above the cost that we can get reimbursed by claims conference.
Right.
So people, staffing.
You're not alone, Paulo, I tell you that.
Keeping
right
everyone
now.
And getting quality. Every time you get someone, it's higher. And then people talk. So right. You get one counselor, one therapist at one price, whatever. And then the rest of the people is lining up. It's like, you're bringing this higher rates, whatever. And we've been here for years. What's going to happen to us? And
is that happening with other agencies as well? What Paul is talking about, people asking you for more money because you're.
For us, and maybe it's just the financial situation we're in that's slightly different, but we pretty much do it proactively. So if we bring somebody in, if there's maybe some small differential or something like that, but if it's significant, we'll make adjustments for the other people that are already in the same position, the same classification, or in a related one at the same time proactively. And they may not even know it. You know, it's not like we're going to say, hey, you know, we negotiated with the new person, so you're all getting this. But, you know, we'll try to do that as a reflection of the market if we're going to make that kind of adjustment, or we just won't. And that goes along with salary transparency, which we have had for about, I think, 2 years since we started posting salaries at the time of hire. And so that just supports having those conversations anyway.
Yeah, and the same thing with accounting people or the controller or everyone else. So sometimes you have a CFO, but you bring a controller, the controller is making more money than your previous CFO. And it also happens down with the people in the entry level, for instance, the aides. We started when I got here 18 months ago at $10.50 per hour. And now we are at 50, we are planning to go to 15. Right. So from 10.50, we went to 12, we went to 13, now we're jumping to 15, because we just don't get to that point where we cannot stop losing aides and attracting new ones.
Okay, let's hear from Andrea. What do you?
I have a quick question on that. So we've been at our agency, we have as you all do, a lot of different programs with a lot of different positions, but our largest program is counseling. So we have mental health therapists, licensed associate and independently licensed on staff. And I'm as the COO and also the CFO, so I have dual roles, concerned because we're just continuing to try to chase the salary on Indeed. So we're getting people declining positions because the salary is too low. We're getting current in-house people wanting more money because they see what on Indeed's got posted and now they want more money. But there has to be at some point a happy medium, like. And I'm wondering if anybody has any ideas around that. Access isn't giving us any more money for billing. Access is state Medicaid. They're not giving us any more money for an hour of therapy. Medicare isn't giving us any more money for an hour of therapy. And we just can't keep chasing this salary that's out there. Does anybody have any ideas, or have you done things at your agency to kind of reach that middle of the road, if you will?
The only thing that we took a look at and we adjusted recently, and I'm in Atlantic and Cape May County in New Jersey, because we're in the same boat. We're understaffed. The work keeps coming in. It's kind of, you know, we are actually even looking at our turnover rates in the first, you know, few months of hire, because obviously we're looking at, are we not our interview process is not what they should be. But to speak to the salaries, I mean, we really started, we looked at our key clinical staff, including some people in supervisory roles, because, you know, without them, we can't do anything. And that's where we chose, even though we still have many open positions, and it remains to be seen, because we just did this like a month ago. We increased the licensed staff as well as the supervisors to try to become more on comparison. And we have a huge, as many people probably do, but we have a huge hospital based system that does physical, mental health. They got everything, right? We can't compete with them. But, you know, we're looking at, you know, if we can keep at this point, stabilize that group of people with the salaries, and then kind of focus on other positions within the agency. Again, remains to be seen, but that's just where we decided to prioritize right now, in hopes that we could stabilize that line in that group and not have people, you know, going out the door. It's one thing if it's a good, you know, if it's a career move opportunity in that regard, which we're seeing a lot of that too. But, you know, it's another thing if someone is just leaving because the benefits are just a tad bit better. And we are also, we just had a kind of an open forum today, our first in-person in, you know, since COVID started. We had moved all of our staff meetings to remote, to Zoom platform, but we talked about, we're going to continue, even though things have really loosened up, working in a remote fashion, or and putting that as, you know, kind of a benefit to the agency. Now, not every program can do that, because not every position is possible, but really a commitment to looking at that flexibility that we've been utilizing. I'm sure everybody else, most part, has too, for the past several, you know, past few years with COVID, how we can continue that to help with the work-life balance, because that was identified as something that was really important to staff as well. So again, remains to be seen if either one of those steps are going to be beneficial, but that's where we started.
A couple of things that came up there that might be, you know, as how we look at it here. One is because, so we don't have home care, and that, you know, those positions, I, you know, anybody that I know who's in that business, it's just so incredibly difficult. And your resources to put toward it are so limited, and yet, you know, what are you going to do? And everybody has high openings. So because we're not in that space, we don't deal with it. So while we have, you know, survivors that we support through the claims conference, the home care is coming from somewhere else. But I think to the point that both Andrea and Anne were mentioning, at a certain point, who are you comparing yourselves to? And we have the same thing. So it's not as if we, you know, we've made some adjustments. We do try to make them, as I said, sort of across the group. But at some points, you know, it's, hey, if, you know, if they're going to go work for the county and maybe the same exact job that the county gives us a contract to do, we can't pay the same as the county. Same thing with some of the hospitals, certainly for our counselors, if they want to go into private practice. So I think the approach we take is trying to have therapists who are choosing this because they'd rather be in an agency that has all the other wraparound services. They'd rather be in an agency where they have a full load, but they don't have an overwhelming load. And, you know, they're not expected to, on the one hand, they're not expected to work and take, you know, so many clients. But on the other hand, they also don't have the opportunity to make more money in the way that they can in a private practice in some situations. So, you know, at a certain point, we don't chase the salary in the sense that we're not trying to compete with, you know, some of the others, but we certainly want to be at least at the 50th percentile, if not higher, in, you know, similarly sort of situated nonprofits. And that's, so far, that's worked pretty well. I'd say our biggest gap has been in licensed positions of supervisors or program managers that require a license. We're having a devil of a time trying to get people to even apply for those jobs. And we're spending money now with, you know, essentially a recruitment agency to try to help us find it, because we've gone so long without it, and the strain on the people filling, you know, that extra work is so heavy. And it seems as if you're, and I don't have a clinical background, so I've learned that here, but it seems as if clinicians, for the most part, chose that because they want to provide service, not because they want to manage people or supervise people or manage programs. And those who do, there's not as many of them, and everybody's fighting for them. And, you know, if there's this, in this case, a statutory requirement of a certain level of license, we can't adjust it. You know, we make adjustments, especially from a DEI standpoint in a lot of jobs now. We don't have academic requirements, degree requirements, unless they're needed. In other jobs, you know, used to be that for no reason, we would say everybody had to have a car and a driver's license. Like if you don't drive for your job, we don't say that. But if the statute says to be the supervisor of the program, you got to have a certain license, we don't have any choice. And we are having a heck of a time there.
What's happening in Northern New Jersey, TNEC?
I would say it sounds about the same as everybody else, unfortunately. The only thing that we've been really working with is that we have, I think to Lee's point, the supervisors, that is just a whole other ball game. That's really been challenging to recruit, but a lot of the rest of our clinical staff is consultants. And we've been, in addition to looking at our pay scale, really thinking about what incentives could look like for consultants. So we have started offering differentials for certain things like paperwork, or if you work in a school, or if you take on a certain caseload. The other thing we've done, which I thought was a little, you know, but all of this falls, like, it's always the balance, right? It falls on our development team. We're pushing a lot on philanthropy and fundraising to help sort of backfill what we're spending on the clinical side, which may or may not be fair, but they're a robust team, so we're working with them. But we have been offering continuing ed credit trainings free of charge to clinical staff. We have a relationship with a local university, and we have been working with them to provide, you know, it's training that's really based on what we're seeing in our clinical practice, so very relevant topics, but then offering them free of charge and allowing people to get CEUs. I think people are appreciating that. So we don't have the situation at the moment so much of people leaving, but we have grown quite a bit, and we're having trouble hiring new.
That's a good idea, offering CEUs. You have to get accredited, but it's a good way to bring in some, you know, social workers, or, you know, and also get your name out in the community.
Oh, but we're not providing the training. We've contracted with Rutgers University, and their trainers are coming in.
Okay.
Yeah. We chose not to go down that path of getting accredited. It was a little much at this moment.
Yeah.
I was just going to add, ours is very similar. We are very short-staffed in terms of our direct service professionals, whether it's the ones working with our residential or day program or in our school program, like the paraeducators. Some of our programs, you know, have a third less, are missing a third of what they should have in their staffing. We were able to increase both our direct service, our DSPs, and our paraeducators a raise this year. Partly we're hoping comes from some state funding, but Illinois is still working on their budget. And part of it similarly is from development. You know, we're looking at some specific donors saying, like, we have this, you know, $10,000 we just needed to spend on subsidizing this for the last 3 months, and just kind of going to people directly, but really relying heavily on philanthropy, which is not a great sustainable model, does not feel great. We also started an incentive like after 90 days of employment. So for new hires, you know, we did an incentive, and for managerial level, a little bit higher. But now we're looking at, you know, sort of the retention side of it. You know, do we need to do anything on that end financially? But trying to do as much as we can just on like that work life. What is it like to work here and having a good place, and talking a lot about the why of why we do this work. But it is hard. It's really hard. And like Paulo said, you don't want to turn anyone away.
Signing and the retention bonuses have been, you know, we've so far not done that. We're definitely seeing it more and more. And it goes to the point you made, which is, you know, I'm quite sure, especially with salary transparency now, if we start posting jobs and say there's a signing bonus, then I'm sure our staff are going to feel like, well, I just got here 18 months ago. and I didn't get a signing bonus, and now the next person's going to get one, or I've been here for 6 years and I'm not getting that money, but you're going to give it to the new person who you don't even know yet and hasn't done a lick for the agency yet. So we've so far tried not to do that, but it is hard. It feels like when competitors are doing it, but it just doesn't seem to be a very good use of resources when it comes to trying to retain the people that are here and already doing a great job.
We are doing some, you know, stipends. Yeah. Like if someone's taking on more work because they're short staffed, we're trying to offset it that way with giving some specific stipends for specific roles that weren't part of, you know, like if we're short a teacher in a classroom and the paraeducator is stepping up on this many days, like giving some stipends. But I agree with you. It's not a great model.
Same as you, Audra, we have been doing that adjustment to the salaries because sometimes it's not a couple of weeks. For instance, we have a very small IT department, only 3 persons, and we were missing 1 IT specialist for the help desk. And it took us more than 6 months to get the person. So during those 6 months, we gave a substantial amount of money every paycheck to the 2 remaining people. And then it was they really appreciated that. They really appreciated that. So if we had to pay more or less to the person coming, they didn't feel that you're paying this person more and you didn't adjust anything. And if the person is coming at a higher rate, what we are doing is, as Lee saying, being a little bit proactive and not only bring the new person at the new rate, but if necessary, adjust a couple of thousand here and there a year for the people who is in the job. So very dynamic, a lot of moves, and not giving any more salary increases across the board. So we are being very selective and looking at every individual case. So for budget next year, we're thinking about maybe a 4% increase or 5% increase, but not for everyone. So that will be the average. And some people may get more, some people may get less or none. So it's complicated, but I think the new times are different.
The framework that you described, Polo, of trying to decide whether to do things or whether to keep doing them seems like a very strong one. We don't really have anything quite that formal. And I would say new things are done with quite a bit of deliberation and very slow pace typically, and on a pretty small scale, and then moving from there. But I think the similarity is that we have a pretty active adherence to our strategic plans. We just went through the planning process this last year, so the next 3-year plan is in place. And that's sort of, we try to use that as the same lens. Like if we want to do something new and you look at the strategic plan priorities and it doesn't fit there, then one of two things has to happen. We either aren't going to do it, or we're going to have to adjust the strategic plan to say that it's enough of a priority to do it. But that's I'd say, the closest thing we have to putting it through that kind of a rubric to decide, you know, whether to do something, but that's typically in the more of adding something as opposed to whether we continue to do it.
One other change that we recently made, which might be a little beneficial for some of our newer staff coming in, is we used to have 6-month policy before people could use their vacation, and we dropped that down to 3 months. And when it was announced, there seemed to be quite a bit of applause. And I think it was kind of on both ends, from a staff member's ability who is new to use vacation time beyond, you know, not having to wait 6 months. And also the supervisors feeling a bit relieved because, you know, once people hit the 6 months, especially in the staffing that we're in, you have a lot of people wanting to take vacation. It allows, you know, that to be staggered a little bit more in some of the programs that are smaller. So that was one thing that we changed up as well recently.
We did a couple of things kind of like that as well. It's weird on the vacation front because I still think a lot of supervisors, they can't get people to take vacation. You know, early in the pandemic, it was like, well, why am I going to take a vacation? I can't go do anything. I can't go anywhere. And then we still were trying to encourage people, well, just take some time where you're not working. And even as it's opened up, we're still getting some of that pushback, or people just aren't doing it. But we made a similar change where we didn't have a delay in using it, But you know, when you start, you're earning it in such small amounts. So a couple of years ago, we started doing two times a year, January and July. You get 6 months allotment dropped in because we don't allow people to borrow for future vacation earning. But now you get it, you earn it twice a year, and you're essentially using it before you've really accumulated it. And if somebody leaves and they've taken it, so be it. But at least for new people in particular, it gives them a chance to, you know, have some vacation instead of practically speaking the same as you had, Anne, where they're waiting because they don't have any. And then we did add, after the staff themselves, actually, we have like a, it's called Staff Association, and it's anybody who's not a supervisor can participate, and they sort of advocate for any variety of things. You know, over the years, it's had to do with, you know, dress for your day instead of certain dress codes or a variety of different things. And they really were advocating hard and did a survey of staff and around paid, they proposed paid parental leave. And we ended up putting into place starting January 1st, paid FML. So whether it's parental or if you have another FMLA qualified leave, we're now providing up to 6 weeks of paid leave. And it is primarily going to be parental, but there are other people that have had, you know, other covered leaves under family medical leave. And that was very well, you know, received. And I think it will be used. We have a number of staff who are, you know, having babies, or partner or spouse or somebody else. And I think they felt like 6 weeks was at least a pretty good place to start. As we watch really both at the federal, at the federal and the state level, we're watching these bills, you know, is anybody going to do anything? And there is in Minnesota at the legislature a bill, no way it's going to get through the Republican side. We're one of two states, I think, in the country that have a split legislature. We have a Republican Senate and a Democratic House. So that was another thing we did, where the cost just isn't that high and the benefits could be very high, we think.
What about vacation time? What are people giving people? More vacation? That's a big perk. You know, two weeks?
Yeah, That's no good. Uh-huh. We have, I mean, since I've been here, I mean, it's 4 weeks vacation. And
for everyone across the board?
Yeah. It accrues. So it accrues from the time that you start. So it's 4 weeks vacation, 3 weeks sick time, and then up to 18 or 19 holidays, depending on, because we do follow the calendar. So if the holidays fall on a normal working day, the high holidays, people are given the day off and one floating holiday. We also recently added, we have bereavement days for immediate family, and we extended that not to the extent of the bereavement days for extended family, but added because it was only immediate family, and it was 5 days for immediate family, which was constituted like anybody, like mom, dad, et cetera. But we added a day for, like, if it was an aunt or an uncle or a niece or a nephew, that people, you know, could kind of use that. It's not the full package of bereavement, but it's something. So we're looking at benefits
to the
like
funeral.
That. Yeah. What's that? Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah. So we're looking at ways that, you know, it's a cost, but the cost is minimal and, you know, kind of, you know, really in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Andrew, did you still have your hand raised, or was that from before?
That's from before. I'm sorry.
Okay. No worries. We actually just dealt with bereavement leave. That's interesting because we had it as, it wasn't even called out specifically as like a header in the handbook or in the benefits guide. It was just in sick leave. It said, if you have those immediate family members, you can take 3 days of sick leave. So we just made a decision actually to, at the suggestion of our HR manager, to call it out as bereavement leave, to give people 3 days that are not part of, well, we changed sickness leave to wellness leave. That was another suggestion that was made by staff. So it's wellness leave, but you don't have to use it for bereavement. You get 3 days. And we actually dropped all the, we don't even say who it's for, because we have staff who, you know, they don't have any family and friends in this country, let alone nearby.
Yeah,
they
that's,
may have,
that's
they may have
been
people close in
too.
Their lives. Yeah. And if that's the person for whom they want to take the days,
yeah,
they just take the days. So we just decided to drop that structure altogether.
Here we have only 11 days, and you add, after a year, you add all the way to 15. year after year. So while you are, when you are like 5 years into the organization, you have 15. Thing is that in
August,
September, 15? We have a lot of holidays.
Wait, you said 5 years? You get 3 weeks after 5 years?
Yeah. So you start with 11 days and then you go, you accumulate to 11, to 15.
We did a... it's so a short, I think, 2 weeks vacation, right?
It's short because the thing is that I think the way we interpret this is because of all the Jewish holidays we have in September, October, there are like 4 or 5 consecutive weeks, but you have only like 3 day work weeks.
Well, that's true.
So you have 3 day, 3 day, 3 day, 3 day. And the people take those days. A lot of people take advantage, and with 3 days, they have a full week. So we try to plan ahead.
It's not always like that. It's every 5-7 years. It's like that because sometimes it's Tuesday, Wednesday. You have to take the Monday off Thursday.
Yeah, but last year it was like that. And this year is also like that. And the other thing is if we have a lot of people with a lot of accumulated days. So it's not that we don't give the days. It's that they cannot find the time to take them. So what we're trying to do is find the time for them to take them. We're also giving on-spot recognition to people. So if anyone can recommend anyone for that, you get a free day because you did a great job. So you get a certificate, and Miriam gets in the cafeteria, and then this person had a on-spot award because worked a lot of, like doing a lot of things to have this audit ready, and went beyond the what they had to do. And because of that, this person recommended this person, and it's now recognized. And then you get a full day off on top of your regular days.
Good idea. It's kind of fun.
And people like it.
People will want to do a good job because potentially they could be nominated and get a day off. I love that.
And the other thing is when you really work hard, like for instance, we have Matzah Mitzvah this Sunday, and a lot of people volunteered from the organization to work there. They get an administrative day in exchange because they worked all Sunday delivering, helping load cars so people could go with their cars and deliver food to elderly, frail individuals. So we're trying to be more flexible in that sense. And I think people appreciate that, but the real problem is to find the time to break.
If anybody's
I have a question for you.
Okay, I was just saying, if anybody's thinking about holidays, we did do actually last year a survey, and we had about 25 agencies tell us which holidays they give, which ones they don't. And that was helpful. We were thinking about adding holidays here, and it was helpful to see. So Lisa has that, or I have that, if you're interested, ask. And then I was saying we couldn't get people to use vacation days. So twice during the first 2 years of the pandemic, we offered people could basically get paid out for some of their vacation days. And then of course, what happened was then people started asking us to make that permanent. And we said, no, just take your vacation. We're not gonna keep paying you to not take your vacation. But so I think it was helpful when we did it, but it set a precedent that people wanted it to become permanent. But Polo, you said you had a question for the group and we have a few minutes left.
One of the interesting things that came out of our last conversation with the Greater Miami Jewish Federation is the request to follow this common best approach, which is best practice that fiscal people should have at least 5 consecutive days off during the year. I don't know if you have that in any of your facilities, any of your agencies. And it is because in theory, when you have a fiscal operation, somebody is off for a week, you can find out about any practice that person is doing. But on the other hand, it's good for the person because then they are forced to make sure that they have at least a full week of vacation. So I don't know if any of you have heard of that practice or being...
Interesting. I've heard of that of people in like big sort of banking operations where they're forced to be offline. Like, you know, a lot of people when they're on vacation, they might check their email, but I've heard of people in like the banking industry where they are cut off from the system for a week, as you say, to protect from fraud or that sort of thing. But I've never heard of it in a nonprofit or really any other kind of a sort of smaller mid-sized business. So we do not have that for our accounting and finance staff. I've never heard of that suggestion. Does anybody else have that suggested by an auditor or anybody?
Yeah, interesting because it can.
Andrea, you have too.
Yeah, I'm an accountant by trade, so it's a very common practice and a common request. In fact, here at JFCS, we try to implement that, but we don't have enough depth. So if one of us goes on vacation now, you know, for a week, there's only like three of us and the other two are basically stuck doing, you know, like instead of 12 jobs, 14 jobs for a week. And it got to be really almost burdensome. At one point in the fall, I had my entire team out and I was the accounting department for 90 days. So
while 9-0.
So I get the need for it and the necessity from an accounting perspective. But when you're so small, the practicality of it is that it's just not feasible.
That's interesting because I think on the one hand, I agree that like, because, you know, we don't have that many people either. But on the other hand, it just seems to like, to have any structure, whether it's accounting or anybody else, where people can't take 5 days, if it's really 5 days, if that's the idea is to unplug or be disconnected for a week, like I would hope all of our agencies have ways for people to take at least a week of vacation. I mean, I actually thought when you first brought up the 5 days that it was going to be a best practice recommendation from a mental health standpoint, because I think it's so different. If you just take, like I'm conditioned in my career to take long weekends and I know, you know, I'm telling other people take a week of vacation and a lot of times I don't do it. But when you do it, it's very, very different. Even like I took one in February and I did like an hour and a half of email every morning just to like not fall too far behind. But I really took 5 days of vacation. It's very different than a few days here and there. And I think if we don't, as a network, say we got to treat people in a certain way, you got to give people time for this, especially when we have so many clinicians and other social workers and other people who have been helping people who have gone through the worst of their lives while they themselves are bearing the same burdens. You know, I don't know. And I get it. Like, you know, I can't make money appear in your salary structure, but I think we just have to find ways that people can take vacation.
I agree with you, Lee.
An excuse to force people to take a full week off.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you, Lee. It takes like 1 or 2 days to disconnect. And 1 or 2 days before coming back, you start already thinking about coming back. So you need at least somewhere in between those 3-4 days in the middle that you're actually disconnected. And the issue is you have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
Because you don't want, if it's a policy and everybody has to take at least a week and you're in November and you still have half of the department with right. that situation, everyone wants to go out in the same weeks at the yes. end of the year. And that's a mess when you're trying to close a calendar.
Yeah.
So complicated, but that's more or less what we are dealing with.
And with the situation, Andrew, with your 90 days of covering for other people, we do something similar to what Polo said, which is we've not structured it where people are getting paid extra during the time, which is interesting, but we have the opportunity for a supervisor to come forward and say, you know, we've had one person on parental leave for 12 weeks and somebody quit and the position was open and our staff's all been doing more. And they can sort of ask for a one-time bonus. And we sort of know what the amounts are that, you know, if you've really gone above and beyond, especially covering for other people or vacant positions. And that's, I think, at least helped to soften the burden that people have had to carry for other people who are out in those kinds of situations.
Yeah. There's another one, which is give a bonus for somebody referring a person that you end up hiring. So at the end of the 90 days of the person, you give the person a bonus.
We're only doing $200 and I hear other people are doing a lot more. And we've been doing that for like 15 years. What if, do other people give a lot?
Yeah, we just upped it to $1,500.
What?
Wow.
We're in New Jersey. We have South Jersey. We have nobody. They have to stay six months.
We did holiday bonuses for our entire staff, regardless of day to hire. We had people that got hired in November got a holiday bonus in December, and every single employee got net $2,500.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's great. So,
yeah. So great. It was great meeting all of you. I'm off to the next thing. Bye-bye.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, bye, everyone. See you in the conference. And that'll be fun. And Lee, I will make sure I get everyone the affinity group information out to everyone.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa.
Bye. Thank you.
Happy Easter spring. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye, Ann.